Wonderful.
Great. So, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome. We're all really glad you're here today. It's my pleasure to introduce Meredith Cohen. Meredith is an occupational therapist with Rehab Without Walls. She works closely with individuals navigating life after brain injury, something that we are all certainly familiar with, helping people like us rebuild skills, confidence, and a sense of forward movement, even during difficult times. Today, Meredith will be speaking on a topic that is near and dear to anybody in our community, why progress can feel slow. One of the things that I heard early on, right after my own injury, was progress at glacial speed is still progress, but I wanted it faster. Meredith is going to help us to better understand that experience and offer her perspective. And I think it's going to resonate with all of us. So Meredith, thank you for being here, and I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Can you guys see my PowerPoint? Okay.
Yes.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you, David. Thank you so much for having me here. When David and I first spoke a few weeks ago, he left it open for me to pick the topic. And I thought back over the last 14 years as an OT, so many topics that I could talk about, but I think the most common theme was what we're talking about today, why progress feels slow. So, a little more background about myself. I've been an OT for 14 years. I got my start at Spalding Rehab in Boston, where I fell in love with brain injury rehab. Just fell in love with every patient that I worked with and all the intricacies of it. You know, it's very different than a lot of rehab. It's very different than orthopedic rehab, obviously. You know, and part of the progression is why I like it, because there is so much growth and there's no timeline and there's no, you know, end date. So, I got my start at Spalding. Then I went and worked at Mass General in Boston. And most recently, I'm a OT with Rehab Without Walls. We're a national organization helping folks reintegrate into their home and community after a brain injury. And over the years, I've worked with tons of individuals and families navigating recovery. And one theme that comes up again and again is, why does progress feel so slow? And you know, that comes up in many different ways. Am I doing something wrong? You know, why am I not further along? I thought I'd be better now. So today, you know, I really want to break that down, talk about why progress can feel slow after brain injury and what exactly is going on in your brain. And first, I want to start with a story. Oh gosh. Okay. Please. First, I want to start off with a story. I worked with a young woman named Rebecca about 15 years ago, and she was in a car accident. She was in a car accident and she was inpatient for 3 months. At that point, oh, please. Okay, sorry, there's a little disruption here. She was in a car accident and she went to inpatient in Michigan where she was in college. From there, she went to Spalding Rehab and she was making great progress. And then when she came home, when I met her, she was really frustrated. The progress wasn't continuing. And it wasn't that she wasn't motivated, it was that reality kind of sunk in, right? And I want to show you this picture here, right? When I searched for this picture, ironically, I found hundreds of similar pictures because this is, you know, exactly what's happening. And if that story that I told you about Rebecca sounds familiar to you in any way, I just want you to know you're not alone. And I think the importance of these support groups is just that, to, you know, validate for you that you're not alone, that these are very common feelings that, you know, most are having. You expect recovery to look like this, right? When you were at the hospital or your loved one was at the hospital, you saw progress happening pretty quickly. And maybe people told you, you know, you've plateaued, which we don't like that word in therapy, right? Because it's just a slower progress. It's not as quick. You're not going from, needing help with something to becoming independent with it immediately. This is reality, right? It looks more like this: up and down, two steps forward, one step back. If I had a dollar for every time I've said that, I'd be a millionaire. But I think a big missing piece in healthcare right now is that nobody tells you what the reality is going to be, right? Nobody tells you that ahead of time. And so when you get home and you feel like progress is slowing down, you can feel like something's really wrong when it's actually completely normal. So if there are any therapists on here or clinicians or loved ones, or if you're a survivor yourself, I want you to know that it's completely normal. Okay. And we're going to break down what exactly is happening in the brain during this progression. But I really want to start with kind of everybody, if you're going to get anything from this conversation, which I hope you get a lot, but if you get one thing, I want you to kind of reset your expectations, not lower them by any means, but reset them and know that, we can't go from one place to another in a few days. It's going to take time. The progression is slow. We're going to break this down a little bit more. All right, a quick check-in for everybody. I would love this to be interactive, so I'm not just talking at you for 40 minutes, but quick show of hands. How many of you have felt like things are going slow or, we'll use that term plateauing. How many of you feel like at times, either yourself, if you're a survivor, or a loved one, with a show of hands, have felt like things have slowed down? Good. Beautiful. I hope you guys look around and see that a lot of you are raising hands. Yeah. Right? So that's almost everyone. And what about the timeline of things? Were you hoping that you could, do something quicker? Show of hands. Yeah. Awesome. That just validates for you, right? So that's almost everyone, right? So if you after your brain injury couldn't drive, would you realistically expect that you could drive in 3 months? How would you know, right? How would you know what the expectation is? What I want you to kind of reframe in your mind is, maybe you can't even, after your brain injury or your loved one couldn't tolerate even being in the car for a few minutes because it, gave you headaches or made you nauseous or dizzy, right? What progression looks like is maybe you're able to sit in the passenger seat in a parked car for 5 minutes. And then maybe the next week, you're able to sit in the car as a passenger for a short drive. And maybe in a month, a longer drive, and that's progression. That is a huge progression. And I think as a therapist, I would see this progression, and loved ones will see progression way more than you're going to see it yourself. And I would get so blown away by someone's progression, and they would be so stunned at my reaction. Like, what are you talking about? I'm nowhere where I want to be in my goals. And I'd say, this is a vast improvement. And, having to reiterate that because your perspective on it is so different, right? Okay. If anyone has any comments or wants to chime in at any point, feel free. Let's see the chat here. Nope, nothing specific. All right, we'll move on. All right.
I'm
Yeah.
sorry, Michael Koss has raised his hand. I'm not sure if he's got a statement or a question.
Sure. You want to unmute?
Go ahead, Mike, if I'll allow you to unmute.
It's done. Thank you. I just wanted to say that I am a 19-year brain injury survivor who suffered the DAI 19 years ago through a car accident, and I continue to to make small progress to this day with my recovery, whether it be speech by speech or step by step, etc. They said that I would never walk, eat, or talk again. And I told my parents, put your son in a long-term care home for the rest of his days. So, although I'm not the same individual that I was 20 years ago, I just want to never give up. Always keep looking forward. Put a smile on your face. I have no anger, regrets, or what happened. In fact, I think that what happened to me 20 years ago was the best thing ever because it put both feet back on the ground and made me realize what is truly important in life. Family, friends, and good health, of course. So I just want to share that with the group. Thank you, everyone.
Oh my gosh. Well, I can't continue now. I need a little bit of a break to emotionally regulate here. Let me take a deep breath. Michael, thank you so much for sharing that. My sentiments exactly. I'm so proud of you. And the sky's the limit. So let's talk about why progress feels so slow, right? And you guys have probably heard a lot of these things, but I really want to break it down. The brain is healing gradually, right? Recovery takes time. And you guys have all heard the term neuroplasticity, I bet. Right? And so the brain is healing, just like a cut on your hand, right? Like a lot more intense, a lot more going on there, but it's healing and it takes time, right? For things to heal, we need good sleep, we need nutrition, we need time. But specifically with the brain, we need repetition. Right? And not repetition over a week and once a day. We need thousands of repetitions over months, years, 19 years, like Michael, right? And that's frustrating, I can imagine. As someone who works directly with these people, I have to, keep this momentum and this motivation up and keep encouraging because it's extremely frustrating. You're not going to see the progress as clear as you want, but just know that it's happening, right? They're small and they're really easy to miss. So leave it up to your OTs and your PTs and your loved ones to tell you and believe them when they tell you you are making progress, And you might not see it, but you are. I promise you, you are. Okay. Because it's very easy to give up. And I understand that. And the fact that you're all here today in this support group shows me that you're motivated and kudos to all of you for keep showing up and for continuing showing up. We're going to talk a little bit more about this next piece in the next slide, but fatigue, right? That we could talk about fatigue probably for a week. It really impacts your performance, right? Whether or not you've had a brain injury, fatigue is going to impact your performance. Skills don't transfer right away. So what works in like a therapy clinic, doing a task is not going to transition to your home when you're making an omelet the next day, right? Like I could do this in therapy, but why can't I do it at home, right? We'll talk more about that as well. But these are kind of the overarching things I want you to see that, this is why your progress feels slow.
Meredith, do you mind if I jump in? I
Please,
will.
yeah.
Michelle in the chat has a question. She asks, "Will the brain heal completely?" And I'll defer to you to answer that.
I think we have to kind of reset what healing completely means. I think I saw someone's name here calling themselves David 2.0. Did I see that? Dan 2.0. I'm going to call you out, right? So your neurologist has probably talked about this as well, that your brain, if you consider healing to be, it depends what you think healing is, right? You're going to be probably not exactly the same, but you're going to be able to eventually, based on your impairment, be able to do those things again in a different way, right? It depends on the extent of the damage. And I think these are great questions, and I would love to give you a crystal ball, and I'd love to be able to tell you. We don't know. Really, we don't know. Neuroplasticity is only really recently a phenomenon in, I think, the late 1990s, if you can believe it, is when all these studies started. Before that, they thought after a brain injury or stroke, there was no healing. So we're still learning. And I am, obviously a huge advocate for continuing to focus on recovery and make that your end goal. But I think it's, you got to think about what healing looks like and the realities and the expectations. But that's a great topic, and I hope we can get a little more clarity for you in our discussions here.
And we've got another one for you,
Sure.
Meredith. Our beloved Dan 2.0
Oh, gotta speak up.
has his hand up. Dan is also a BIHN support group facilitator.
Awesome.
Dan, you've got the floor, my friend.
Thank you, David. Meredith, thank you so much for what you do. I had a very good relationship with the therapist that I worked with in Rochester, New York, and I continue to stay in contact with them. So that's cool. People like you are the unsung heroes that make us appear to be human-like again.
Oh gosh. Okay, I gotta get out of here, guys. I'm gonna lose it. I'm gonna cry.
Well, I just wanted to say, I think the most impactful piece of my recovery was, yes, the encouragement that I got from all of my loved ones and caregivers. But the fact that I've learned in my career prior to my injuries that nothing good happens when you're negative. You have to stay positive, right? So positivity is probably the most powerful force in this universe. So I've tried to keep myself positive, and I've let myself have like a bad day. It's okay to walk around grumpy and yapping at everybody and kicking stuff around one day. The second day, you better get out of that funk because you know what? Nothing good happens when you're grumpy or when you're
Exactly.
negative.
Exactly.
So I've tried to do that, and I'm 6 years out. I'm about 6 and a quarter years out actually now. And I didn't know if I'd be able to drive again, but a couple of weeks ago, I drove myself from just east of Rochester, New York to Pittsburgh to meet with a new eye specialist that specializes in treating TBI survivors. So I drove there, spent a night, went to see him, went through testing with him, spent another night, came back home. He's given me a bunch of therapy to do, exercises and online stuff. And I see progress in the 2 weeks it's been since I've been down there. I feel
Amazing.
better already. So don't ever give up. Stay
Yeah.
positive. Don't ever give up. It's okay to be grumpy occasionally. As long as you don't kick the dog, literally, it's okay. But just you got to get over it too. And
Yeah.
if you have
I think
somebody,
that's great. Yeah.
if you
And
have
I'm so
somebody
glad
that
you said that. I'm so glad you said that because I think sometimes when therapists tell survivors to stay positive, they're like, easy for you to say, right? So it's good that you are saying that. I think that's so important. I believe that with any diagnosis, cancer, everything, positivity goes such a long way. And I also that you bring up a good point that, kind of switching it up, and we're going to talk about this in a little bit, switching up what you're doing is really important too. So if you're, doing the same type of therapy for 6 months and you're not seeing progress, you've got to maybe switch it up, find something a little different. And we're going to talk about specifics. And I'm also going to send David like a little worksheet I have for you guys with some tips and tricks. So that's included in there. But thank you again, Dan. So this slide, I really love this slide. And the content here. Why am I so tired, right? There's so many pieces to this, but the most important piece is that the brain is working harder to do basic things. Okay. So you're going to fatigue much quicker. I heard someone even just the other day said, I took a shower and I was wiped out. Right. So a shower can normally take pre-injury maybe 20 minutes, 15, and then you go on your day. Whereas now those activities are taking a lot more out of you because your brain is busy on the other end healing. So paying attention, walking, talking, planning simple tasks. You know, it's like your brain lost its autopilot, right? So I have an autopilot that I can multitask and I'm, you know, not fatigued after that. But if I had had a brain injury, I wouldn't have that autopilot working anymore around the clock. It's something that needs to be relearned and built back up. All right. Number two is that your brain and your energy is like a battery, right? After injury, that battery is smaller now. Okay, so you had an iPhone 14 brain and now you have an iPhone 2 brain, right? Your storage is smaller. Okay, you might move up to an iPhone 15 or 16, but it takes time. So your battery is smaller, meaning that it's going to drain faster, right? So your cell phone's at a lower percentage, all right? And what's happening there physiologically is that your brain was disrupted. And so your efficient use of glucose, you know, of what you're eating, of the amount of oxygen you're getting from your blood, like that's all disrupted. Whereas right now, you know, in a pre-injury, your brain was working efficiently, getting oxygen, sending it to your muscles, getting glucose from what you eat, carbohydrates from what you eat, and giving you energy. Right now, that process was disrupted. It was injured. And so that takes a lot of time for that to start again. So, you know, some of this is up to your control and some of this is out of your control. Like you can't speed up how quickly your brain's going to heal. You know, you could probably take your vitamins, eat well, get sleep, you know, eat your protein, but you know, we don't know how far that's going to go. Number three, this I like to think of as the Times Square analogy, right? So you're standing in Times Square. There are lights, there are noises, there's cars coming by, you know, conversations are happening. If someone comes up to your ear and tells you a story, how much of that story are you going to retain? I'm not going to retain anything. I'm not even going to know who's talking to me because there is so much going on, right? Everything's coming in at once. And so the result of that is sensory overload. Even, you know, if you hadn't had a brain injury, the world is coming at us in so much chaos. And it's really hard to retain information. If you've had a brain injury, even the littlest sensory input is going to be too much. And so we're going to talk in a little bit about some strategies around that, but that amount of input is going to fatigue you very quickly. I mean, I think about like people that, you know, are working in Times Square or work at Disney World. Like, even if they're not walking every day, they must come home so tired, right? From just stimulation overload. So that's happening to you on a daily basis when you're just sitting at home and there's the TV going on and there's phone calls, like, you know, so give yourself grace and understand that your brain is working really hard, right? All right, the big scary monster of sleep, right? How many of you have disrupted sleep or issues with sleep, right? Who doesn't, right? And so many people after brain injury have difficulty sleeping for a variety of reasons. Maybe it's medications you're taking. You know, your circadian rhythm has probably been a little disrupted. Maybe you're anxious. Maybe you're stressed at night. You know, you're nervous about the stressors of having an injury, right? So you're already starting your day depleted with all the other things you got going on. You're starting your day with maybe like 4 hours of sleep disrupted. Like that stinks. And I hope, you know, that you can, that's something that maybe you can control if you can look into, you know, what we call sleep hygiene, and talk to your doctor about that and seeing, you know, ways to improve that because that could really help, right? And lastly, I think we kind of touched on this, but actually healing what's happening in your brain is using calories, it's using energy, and that's going to make you tired as well. So that rebuilding process, that beautiful neuroplasticity, that takes energy. So when you're tired, I don't want you to think that you're failing. I want you to see that as that you're actively recovering. Okay. Right. So I'm tired, right? Loved ones may hear you say that a lot. Why am I so tired? Here's why you're so tired. I'm like so proud of you guys for all showing up today because you've got a lot of, reasons to stay in bed, right? But you're all out of bed and you're all focused on recovery. But it's a lot. It's a lot. So look at the things that you can control and see if there's ways that you can improve any of those to give you a little bit, of a step up on your recovery here. All right. So this is just kind of another visual, but that battery conversation we were having, this is your battery in the morning, right? It's full. And then maybe you push a little too hard and you go down to the red. And then you've got to rest and recover. And maybe you need the whole day. And so, this is really important is to learn how to pace. And it may feel really, kind of like not natural, but in the morning, if you can write down or jot down, like, hey, I have, a doctor's appointment at 2, that whole process tends to really wipe me out. I'm going to give myself what I know my brain needs, which is like a 2 hour, like low stimulation time before I go there, and maybe 2 hours after, like a little buffer before, a little buffer after, so that you're not, depleted for the night and you can still do what you need to do at night or the next day. I mean, how many of you have felt like you've pushed too hard and maybe paid for it later? Yeah. Oh, double hands. All right. Good. So you want to pace yourself to prevent that burnout because, you're allowed obviously to have days where you're like Dan said, days where you're tired, days where you're junk, days where you're negative, but you don't want to have too many of those burnout days because we really need, that repetition and that time that we were talking about for neuroplasticity to build. So I love keeping a journal or a notepad with me, and I kind of plan out my day and I give myself. And I've not had a brain injury, but I still, knowing that burnout is real, I still, allow myself to have some breaks in there because I'll be junk for the night, and or I'll be junk tomorrow. And I don't want that. I've got to pace myself and use my time efficiently. So
And Meredith, I'm going to jump in again, if that's
please.
okay. A couple of comments in the chat that are pertinent. Jenna writes that it's been really hard learning my new limits. And I think we all live in that reality, trying to live as we used to live. And a couple of other comments. Bear with me for a minute. Donna had asked about what happens when you lose your hearing after brain injury. And I believe it was Jenna that asked about seizures after brain injury. So a few unrelated comments that are in the chat, but I don't want anybody to feel that they're unseen today.
Yeah. So in terms of the losing your hearing, number one, I'm extremely sorry about that. And I hope that you are working closely with a neurologist or somebody that can that knows the extent of the damage. If it is an issue with specific part of the brain that controls hearing. And if they've talked about, specific therapies that you can do to, improve that, and if that's possible, I encourage you to, pursue that avenue. I'd have to know a little bit more about like where your injury was to understand the progress of it. So we can talk offline too if you want, and I can give you, depending where you live, I can give you some, insight into to different specialists that might be able to help you, or an OT that could help you with some adaptive strategies. I hope that helps a little bit. Forget the second question. Sorry, already. Input overload. Was it about?
Let me find that for you.
I think it was, let's see here.
It was regarding seizures, and I was
Oh,
just
right, seizures.
answering
Yes,
questions. Yeah, sorry.
Thank you. Thank you, Barb.
Yes. So once again, I think that's really, really important. And as many of you know, seizures are a little more common after any type of brain injury. So it's really important that you're talking with your doctor about seizure, anti-seizure medication. Some of you may be on that indefinitely. And that I'm not going to talk out of term, I'm not a neurologist, but I think it's really very, very important that you're talking with your primary care, your neurologist about any seizure activity, obviously getting the yearly checkups or 6 month checkups that you need to do, staying on that medication if you've been advised to. And then in terms of, so I would just really encourage you to talk to your doctors about that. Does that help a little bit? All right. So, we were just talking about kind of pushing too hard, and have some of you pushed, too hard and paid for it after? Show of hands. Yeah. Does anyone want to talk about, any examples of that? Feel free to share, raise your hand. I just think it's important to know how to pace yourself. And if you're having difficulty with pacing yourself, it's easier said than done. I encourage all of you to have a therapist, to talk to an OT or a PT. Even if you're years out after your injury, a lot of times insurance will cover potentially, we don't want to get too much into insurance chat right now, but you can ask your neurologist or your primary care to, give you another referral for therapy, saying that you're having some trouble with your, IADLs or ADLs you can use, and say you're having some trouble with those, kind of executive functioning pieces, and find yourself a really good OT usually kind of does this stuff more, like a neuro OT, usually like in an outpatient setting. We've got, obviously some great ones here in Massachusetts around the Boston area, but if you're in New Hampshire, probably affiliated with like a large hospital there, you could find someone really good. And I bet, potentially virtually, might be an option as well. And I bet David would be a great resource for that. So,
And I'm actually going to, Michael's been patient. He'd like to join the conversation again. So, Mike, I'm going to ask you to unmute, my friend.
Meredith, I have one of my ongoing challenges or limitations is my short-term memory retention. In fact, I'm speaking to a future class of ODs within the next 2 weeks at UBC, University of British Columbia. So I need some tips on memory retention for like speeches, things like that.
Yeah.
What I'm on many supplements recommended by a naturopath at the moment. I watch my diet. I exercise on a weekly basis. So I'm just wondering what more can I do for short-term memory retention? Please, Meredith.
For short-term memory retention?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk specifically about, some specific strategies in a second, but I think for short-term memory, using what we've talked about is building things small. So if you needed, 10 items from the supermarket, right? You'd want to use a list, right? Write that down. But what I would encourage you to do is to not put that big of a project on your brain. Instead, break it down. So try to remember three items, right? And think of a strategy to remember those three items, whether it's writing them down on a piece of paper or creating an acronym, right? If you needed butter, if you needed milk, and you needed eggs, right? B-E-M, right? So strategies where it's easier for your brain to remember smaller pieces, right? Break it down. Break down the goal into smaller sections, like we talked about with driving before. We're not going to go from driving, not driving one day to driving in a week. We're going to break it down. It could take 6 months to a year. So it's the same with short-term memory, right? And the more you're doing that, you're training your brain, right? So it's just like training with any other muscle, right? We're not going to expect it to learn how to do something overnight. We want to give it a small workout, but we want to do it a lot. So every day, try to remember three things,
Yes.
right? So start the morning, butter, eggs, milk. In the afternoon, what were those three things? In the evening, what were those three things? Tomorrow morning, what were those three things? Tomorrow afternoon, what were those three things? Ask your caregiver. Ask me next time you talk to me what those three things were, right? And then in 2 weeks, make that list five items, right? And so this process isn't easy, and I don't expect you guys to come up with, strategies. I think it really is important to work with a therapist and brainstorm these strategies because we're looking at it from an outside perspective. We're looking at your life, you're telling us your goals, and we're breaking it down. We have a term in therapy called the Just Right Challenge. I don't know if you guys have heard about this before, but it works, for really any diagnosis. And it's our goal to find you the Just Right Challenge. So, on a smaller, we don't want something to be too hard. We don't want something to be too easy. We want it to be a good challenge so that that's that sweet spot where growth can happen. Right? So, I encourage you, this isn't, you're not gonna, figure out a just right challenge overnight. You're going to need to brainstorm and break it down and really think about like, what are my goals? What's realistic? What is manageable? What is challenging? What's safe, right? There's so many factors. But I would love to have this conversation with all of you. I think that OTs, we're founded, we're based, our foundation is based in our perspective. And that's, what I love so much about my career choice is that you step back and you try to change your perspective, right? Each person is different. Each square that I'm seeing now has a different story. On my Zoom screen, you guys all have a different story, and you have to be kind of a detective and say, okay, Michael's goals are this, and Michael's experience is this. It's different from David's, and it doesn't look similar. Our picture in the first slide where this is reality, right? Like back and forth and up and down. And you've got to, you can try my short-term memory strategy. And it might work. And there's a lot of unknowns here, but what we do know is that, right?
There's a saying that I heard many years ago that says that if you've seen one brain injury, you've seen one brain injury.
Right.
And
I love that.
I like the interactive component. I love the way this is unfolding today.
Me too.
Rather
Yeah.
than Q&A at the end,
Yes.
we're kind of all jumping in. So with
Yeah.
that, Barb, you had your hand up, and thank you for your patience.
Thank you, David. I can attest that using your short term, the building up your short term memory is A, it's vital because we need it. I cannot tell you how many times I looked around the house for the glasses last week. I mean, the steps I get in for looking for the glasses. But I started, and this was really unique. I had to go through a whole lot of different things, setting up a new computer system and banking and all that. And I had to make a lot of phone calls. That's very hard for me because I transpose numbers with my brain injury. So I worked really hard at doing three and then four lines of numbers. I would try to remember the first three numbers of whatever access, six-digit access code I had to put in. Three numbers and then three numbers. And now I'm able to do eight and 10 numbers
Amazing.
all at once.
Amazing.
And what's really cool is that when my daughter saw me do this, she goes, "Mom, that is shocking to me." So, gold
Really
star.
cool. I know. Well, I heard something once that phone numbers are seven digits because that's what I think that's the amount of numbers that in, the average brain can remember at one time.
Well, okay.
I know, I know. Well,
Thank you.
I think, if you were injured, it's going to go down. And if you're, a savant, you could remember 45 numbers. So, so all right. I'm going to head back in. So, this is a quick check-in, things that still feel hard. And I think we kind of just talked about that and talking about improvement, just a little. And I just want to reiterate that that's what progress looks like, right? It's slightly easier. It's you're slightly faster at something. Something is like slightly less overwhelming. So hard does not mean that you're failing. I want to reiterate that hard means that you found that good challenge. This is what progress looks like. And to kind of go back to the story of my friend Rebecca that I talked about earlier, I went to see her about a year after I treated her, and she was living on her own, independently. She was doing wonderful. And I said, what's going on? What are things you're working on? And she said, I'm not really that social. I'm still like really intimidated about being social. And I said, all right, what kinds of things are you doing to start? And she said, I go down to the common area in my apartment building, and I kind of like read a book, or I look, I sit there and I kind of like act available to encourage socialization. My chin dropped. I mean, I was blown away. That was huge. That was huge for her. She, if you could have seen her years before that, she did not want anything to do with anybody. And she had no awareness that that was such a big, momentous thing that she was doing. And we talked about it for 20 minutes about, how big it was. And I think at the end, she realized, like, wow, I really went out of my comfort zone and I did something. And that's progress, right? So I encourage all of you to kind of like sift back over the last few months and think about things that you've done and let that set in, that that's progress. Like, I bet we could probably list a bunch of examples, but I want to get into some more specifics here. But all right. So I like, kind of talking about this, and I think we kind of touched on it briefly, but why doesn't progress feel like it carries over? And kind of thinking about the two environments. So a clinic, if you're going to outpatient, a lot of great, wonderful things are happening there. Believe me, I am a huge, huge advocate for going to a clinic. But in terms of a brain injury and in terms of your stage, think about a clinic, right? It's quiet. Your task is structured. You're focused on that one task. It's, not that chaotic, so you're not really like expending a ton of energy, and you're just doing one task. Whereas at home, you're probably multitasking, there's noises, there's distractions, and also it's something that's more meaningful, so you're like more invested in it, you're more focused, and there's more energy happening there, and things are unpredictable. I kind of always use the example of like making an omelet in a clinic versus making an omelet at home. They look very different. And if you don't succeed in your omelet, succeed, I don't even know what, really that means, but if you don't hurt yourself, I guess, then that's a success. If you made an omelet, it doesn't matter what it turned out to be. If you made it, that's a success, but it's going to look different. And I want you to kind of shift your perspective a little there too. Like, why, when I go to OT at the clinic, can I do this? And they tell me I did so well. And then I try to do it at home and it's very different. Just understand that they're very different environments. It doesn't mean, that it's going to show up the same way at home. Because life has, more layers to it than therapy does, and it doesn't happen automatically. All right. So what's happening in the brain, right? We've kind of talked about this. I just want to reiterate it. And I don't know, if when people have explained neuroplasticity to you guys, you've thought of the analogy of like building a new trail. For those that live in New Hampshire, you'll like this one. I think of it like building a new trail, right? That original trail on the Appalachian or in the White Mountains, a tree fell down. You can't take that trail anymore. That's what happens with a brain injury, right? And so we have to build a new trail. Now we can bushwhack and walk through a trail, but it won't be that nice of a trail, right? But if we are consistent and repetitive and are doing like quality cuts, we can make a really beautiful trail, but it takes a lot of time. And so I want you to think of neuroplasticity as that pathway trail analogy. You're rebuilding, you're creating new trails, and that takes repetition. But if you do too much at once, right, you're overloaded. So be thoughtful with your recovery. Consistent practices, right? So consistency is so important. Doing that same thing over and over again, that repetition. All right. So here's the meat and potatoes. What actually helps? Okay. So I want you to practice things that you want to accomplish in real life. Okay. Practice them where you actually need them. So if walking, getting better at walking is important to you, try not to walk in, a sterile environment, like a quiet place. I want you to walk in your home, walk from your kitchen to your bathroom. All right. We've talked about this a little bit before, but when you're grocery shopping, remembering small lists, which means you might have to go more frequently. But try to remember small ones. You can write a list of 15, but you could try to practice with these small increments instead. And then if having conversations, these are just examples, right? If having conversations, examples from patients that I've worked with, having conversations in real social settings is stressful for you, start by having conversations in a s environment that's not stressful, right? In your kitchen. Try to have a 5-minute conversation with someone. And then in 2 weeks, see if you can, have a longer conversation with them in your kitchen, or maybe in a quiet library, or stepping up, finding that challenge, maybe in a quiet coffee shop. And slowly building like that and setting yourself up really realistically and slowly for that progression. But I think the most important piece is that you're practicing in real life versus in a clinic setting, depending where you are in your recovery. Second big piece is pacing yourself, right? So if you can do something for 20 minutes, I want you to instead do it only for 15. Because at 20, you might crash. So, hey, I'm going to, whatever task it is, I want to do it for 20 minutes. Try backing up a little bit. See how you feel after 15. And then if you feel okay, maybe the next time you do that task, do it for a little longer. All right. And plan your day with built-in rest breaks. The other thing I've encouraged people to do is breaking up tasks. So, maybe you can break up your shower into multiple sessions. And if you're okay with it, not showering every day or showering at night before you go to bed, if showering takes a lot of energy out of you, right? Or break it up into tasks. I'm gonna make dinner tonight. Oops, sorry. I'm gonna make dinner tonight. And instead of making it all at once, prep, maybe do 20 minutes of prep followed by making dinner a little later after you've gotten some rest breaks. Repeat consistently. All right. So consistency matters more than intensity. All right. So if I'll go back to the kitchen, if your goal is to do a meal, make a meal, start with something simple. I want you to make an omelet every morning. Right? That omelet might look different every day based on what's going on in your home, but consistently make that same thing every day. Your brain will get used to the time. Your brain will start to get used to that pan, the way everything looks, other things going on in the environment, to the point where you're going to build that muscle memory, right? When a child is learning how to do something, which is very similar to neuroplasticity, repetition is so important, right? If they're learning how to throw a ball, how many times are they throwing that ball? Thousands of times, right? They're going in the backyard and they're throwing that ball a bunch, or they're shooting a basketball on a net. How do basketball players get really good at, that shot is that they're just throwing it against the backboard a thousand times, right? And their body's getting so used to doing it. So kind of that analogy as well of like you're training your brain. You're gonna get sick of eggs, but or whatever you decide to make. And lastly, simplify your environment. So the second that I walk into someone's environment when I've worked in home care, and there's a lot of distractions going on, I tell the person, I say, sorry, I have a hard time with multitasking. Is there any way we can shut the TV off, shut the radio off, and have, your cousin in the other room shut his music off? Because I know it's good for you, but I also am overstimulated. So give yourself that, create that environment for yourself, because that's where recovery happens, in an environment that's conducive to neuroplasticity, where you don't have to compete with a lot of other distractions. So turn the TV off. Make life easier for yourself. Maybe set up your clothes the night before. One less thing you have to do the next day. And use your resources, use alarms, use our phones now have so many, apps and things to help with medication reminders and keep you structured, right? It helps reduce, the demand that your brain has on, so many different things that it's being pulled, and it helps you succeed. If anyone on here is a caregiver, these tips can kind of be used in the same way. If you can help your loved one create a good plan for the day, build in rest breaks, encourage rest breaks. Sometimes they might not, survivors might not notice that there's a lot of stimulation going on and they don't know how to advocate for themselves, to decrease stimulation. And so helping them create that environment is really, one of the best things you can do for them. And letting them know that, we've got to break things down, we've got to make things simpler, and let me help you with that. And also, I encourage you to celebrate their small wins. But just as a kind of way to summarize this is that recovery is not about doing this all perfectly. All right. Building success is small. Repeatable ways, and you're allowing your brain to grow from there, okay?
I'm going to jump in for just a quick minute. A couple of pieces. I really love that these are not abstract concepts. It's practical, hands-on, real-world tips and advice that's easier to implement. Quick aside, I posted a link to a survey in our chat, Anybody who's here, if you can take a minute to complete the survey, we're getting a little closer to the top of the hour, and we're basically looking for feedback. We like what we're doing, but we're always looking to do what we are doing better. So if you have a moment, and for 5 or 6 questions, that would be much appreciated. And Dan, you win the most patient square of the day award.
Oh, it's yeah, that's
Your
gross.
hand's been up for a while, so Dan, I'm going to ask you to unmute.
All right. And patience, that's something I've had to relearn. Okay. But yeah, it's good. I just had a question, Meredith, and I've been perpetuating to people when with my knowledge of neuroplasticity, and I want to make sure that I don't have this fundamentally wrong. Okay. My understanding is with your brain and neuroplasticity, the more that you're able to do, okay, the more that you're able to accomplish, maybe tasks that you had trouble with, earlier in your recovery, the more that you can do, and the more that the brain heals, the more likely it is that additional progress will happen, and the easier maybe that that progress can happen, kind of like you build a little bit of momentum. And I want to make sure that's not false. That's been kind of my experience, but I wanted to make sure that I'm not giving other folks in our support groups this utopian hope where that's completely not founded.
I think that's a great question. I think they're still learning, right? They're still doing a lot of research on neuroplasticity. I think what we've see is that within the first 6 months to a year after your injury is when the brain is the most malleable, right? And you're most receptive to change. And that's why the intensity of rehab is so important right after injury, right? So that you're getting those fundamental foundations back quickly, walking, talking, going to the bathroom, all your needs, so I think that progress can happen forever, but I think the reason that you're seeing more progress happen within the first kind of acute stages is because the brain is so malleable. And I'm, on a physiological standpoint, I'm not sure why it kind of, maybe has a slight, not drop off, but it's not repairing as quickly after that stage. I'm not sure. I think that's a great, something to research more and, ask a neurologist about. But it might be the fact that the brain, is looking for a better source of oxygen, or, it's working really hard to get a better blood flow, because as we know, our bodies are so incredible at finding homeostasis and like wanting to repair, innately. So I hope I'm kind of answering
No,
your question in a
you are.
way. I've seen incredible progress with people after years. And like Michael just said, 19 years post-injury and he's still making gains. And I think there's so many factors, right? Like if you had a bunch of comorbidities, if you had, God forbid you had like other issues going on, diabetes we know is not good, and we know that can, delay healing. And your resources, like where you live, if you live in the middle of Kentucky and you can't get resources, like your healing might look different, your progression might look different. If you're not a member of BIHN, your healing is going to look different. Like, so I think you're correct in that, that first acute stage is when the most is happening. And that's why, I believe in intensity ex early on, as soon as you can. That's why it's so important. But I hope I answered your question in a little way, but I think that's a great topic, probably something we could talk about in another whole series.
Got
Thank you so much. Thank you.
yeah, great stuff. A couple of quick things. There's a book by a gentleman named Dr. Norman Doidge called The Brain That Changes Itself, and
Yes.
he talks a lot about late stage recovery. Brilliant read. I've got the top of the hour now. We have
Yeah.
two hands up. Are you all okay with just going for a smidge over? Just I don't know if anybody has time constraints. If you need to drop off, that's okay. But again, we like to be inclusive around here. So, Meredith, do you have a couple of minutes, or does your schedule
Yeah, I
not?
have a couple of minutes. Yeah.
Okay, we'll have Jim share, and then Donna, and then we'll wind down today's session. Jim, you're up. Please share with us.
Hi, Meredith. My name's Jim. I'm calling from Omaha, Nebraska.
Oh, cool.
I suffered a severe traumatic brain injury 17 years ago and am still in that healing process. And kind of my comment is that I found your presentation to be informative and not necessarily directive. It was kind of educational, which I
Yeah.
think is a new twist to often what I hear from people who are presenting to a brain injury community. And I think the most important thing from my personal perspective is, although I'm 17 years out, I think your words and your presentation today can really address and help anyone, regardless of the cause, the severity, or the time from their brain injury. So, if someone were to say, "What do you think of it?" I would say Meredith did a great job of creating a bridge from our community as survivors of brain injury to the information that can really help us improve the quality of our life, regardless of the cause, severity, or the time of our injury. So thank you very much. From Omaha, Nebraska.
Thank you, Jim. What a wonderful share. And that was not a paid endorsement.
No, thank you. Gosh, geez, you
And
guys.
Donna, do you want to wrap it up as our last share for this session?
Good morning, Meredith. I am one of those lucky, unlucky individuals. I was involved in a head-on car accident, and I lost my hearing.
Okay.
I became profoundly deaf in that car accident, and my struggle has been trying to learn sign language, because even though I am verbal in a loud environment, everything is scrambled and I can't make out what's going on. I'm, overstimulated, the environment, the lights. I don't necessarily hear sounds, but it's just all the lights and people, and it's just the chaos of the environment, which confuses my brain, which confuses my speech. So then I can't talk and make sense. So I started learning sign language with my family, and my retention sometimes is a little difficult. So I get things confused. And because of the car accident, I have front and back brain damage. So I had to learn to walk, talk, eat all over again. I'm 3 years out and functioning. I think I'm doing okay, but I'm having insurance issues. I had 30 doctors for 3 years, and then my insurance changed, and I have to get all new doctors again, which makes it difficult for recovery because I developed that relationship with those doctors. And the other thing is like my emotions. So anger, quick to anger, quick to cry, is another issue. And so I'm trying to control the anger so I'm not impulsive, because
Yeah.
that's also affected.
And oh, Donna, thank you. Thank you for sharing. First of all, I know that's a lot of heavy stuff. It's very, and I know it's not easy to hear, but it's what you're going through everything is normal post injury. Doesn't feel normal.
No.
It feels hard. And sometimes it feels like the medical system is working against you. Believe me, I know that. You're here right now, you're motivated. That's huge. You're on this call. You sat for an hour. That's like amazing.
Well, there's closed captions, so that helps.
Exactly. All right, good. I hope I didn't talk too fast.
No,
You know,
no, and
I'd love to chat, more with you. I think the most important piece is to find, a good therapist, a good neurologist.
I have to do that all over again.
I know. I
And I
know
had
it's
good
tough.
ones.
You know,
Yeah.
and look at this beautiful picture that I'm leaving you guys with, right? Healing is not linear. Nothing is linear, but look at the beautiful face that it makes, right? Look at you're going to look back at your journey and you're going to know that there was like a lot of ups and downs. But it's going to get you somewhere. And I just encourage you to stay positive, even when, you can have, a pity party for yourself. But like our friend said, like move on after that and use that energy for good. When you have, some energy, get online, find yourself a good neurologist, take a break after it. Don't call everybody in an hour, call one person. Take a break. Set yourself up for success by creating small, realistic goals. You're not going to find a neurologist in a week. You're not going to get an appointment next week, right? It's going to take time. Ask your resources for help. Ask your neighbors, ask your friends, ask your family, ask the support group. Who lives in my area? Who can help me?
Okay,
I know.
thank you.
It's not clear. I know. I know. I wish we could do this every. But I do have to run and I thank you guys so much and I would love to come back and chat another time, but
Okay.
I'll send this.
Before you jump, the resource that you talked about, I'll make sure it
Yes,
gets out
I will
on
send that to you.
social. A
Yeah.
couple of quick things. One of your opening comments was give yourself grace. And
Yes,
you
I
have
believe in that.
extended your grace to all of us here
Oh.
today. We are so deeply, deeply appreciative. To Donna, I want to share that this is not your end game. This is not your end game. We've all been there. And a round of applause from all of us,
Thank you.
all of us, for all of us, but for you, Meredith. You did just a
Oh,
spectacular
thank you guys.
job
Thank you.
today, and we appreciate you. Thank
Oh,
you.
wow. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you. Have a good
All right.
afternoon. I'll send you that resource
Okay.
right now. All right.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And I'm going to stay in the meeting for a little while. So,
Okay.
okay.